Fuck Roswell, Rendlesham, and the Phoenix Lights. If you can find a case as detailed, credible, and down to the minute as what happened in Lumberton, let me know. I've never seen one, and once you hear what happened, I think you'll agree. There will probably never be another case like this again. By the time this series concludes, over 48 police officers will have seen what they cannot deny was a UFO. Countless citizens will help track its movements. There will be multiple close encounters, nightly high-speed chases of the craft, and a UFO researcher will observe it on more than one occasion. In the end, over and over again, sightings will be measured by the amount of sets of witnesses who are watching close encounters take place. Oh, did I mention? This is one of, if not the earliest, sightings of a triangle UFO in modern history. This week, we're bringing to you a case that's been lost to time. The Lumberton UFO Report, Part 1. I didn't see you there.
It all started early this morning.
From hunting ghosts to Bigfoot, UFOs, cryptids, true crime, paranormal, and more.
I've always wanted to see a UFO.
Oh, I was researching for your entertainment.
That's Bigfoot's get.
He basically wrote the book on modern cult.
We aren't really comedians.
What if Buddha did cocaine?
The Adams Family on meth.
This is the Black Cat Report. See you on the other side. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 86 of the Black Cat Report. My name is Gil, and with me here today is the one and only Joey 3000, J3!
Hell yeah, I'm about to put out a nice album that's just me playing the flute. Oh wait, that's Andre 3000. No, I'm here with you live, so good to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, maybe just a guitar album, I'm not sure.
Could just make it like an entire album of you just slapping on the instrument but not actually touching the strings.
You know people do that, actually.
Yeah. They normally can't afford to make albums, though.
True.
Which is sad. Those musicians are always, fucking super talented, but, like, when's the last time you saw an album drop?
True.
Well, quick announcement up top. Beer, Booze, and Boogeyman Episode 2, Strange Lights and Sightings, will be live on March 2nd, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Central, and 4:30 p.m. for all you West Coast folks. Now, if you've seen a UFO or you've had an encounter, we want to hear it. You can call in live during the show, email us your story for one of us to read on air, or you can even just record your story and submit it to be played during the show itself. There's so many options. You don't have an excuse unless you're shy, and if you're shy, that's okay. I totally understand. But if you do want to share, dead simple to find the place to do it. All you got to do is go to ghost.beer. That's right. That's a real website. ghost.beer. Once you're there, you'll find all the links for all the different options and opportunities you have to watch us, to follow the accounts, to submit your stories, and to interact. Now, I wish I could say that's all, but it's not. See, we are also going to be having a very special guest host joining us for episode 2. The host of Inner Scare Sleep, Inner Scare himself, who, honestly, has a radio voice I could only dream of having. All that aside, there'll be more about that as we approach in the next 2 weeks, so keep your ears out for that. Definitely check our social media, and can't wait to see you there. Definitely make sure to tell us, too, in the chat what beers you're drinking. They have to be paranormally themed.
Always.
Paranormal blue ribbon, yeah.
Yeah, paranormal blue ribbon. PBR, yes, that's the new thing.
Now, our primary source for the next 2 episodes will be the Lumberton Report. Its full title, Report Number 3. The Lumberton Report, UFO Activity in Southern North Carolina, April 3rd through 9th, 1975, by Jenny Ziedman, Center for UFO Studies, Evanston, Illinois, USA, May 1976, Principal Investigators E. Lee Spiegel and Ted Phillips. With that said, find it at the link I'm going to put in our show notes. I'm not sure where I'm going to have it go to yet or where I'm going to put its home, but when you do get to wherever that link takes you, you'll find an upload of the full report, unedited, uncropped, on everything, just as I originally found it, along with a complete text transcript of the report, which I've made and a printer-friendly version I formatted basically because I needed it to take notes and I might as well share it with y'all. So, that said, it's going to be free to download, free to share, free to take, free to read. Let's make this case known. So, why all this buildup? Well, what you're about to hear hasn't been heard in decades. It's been lost. A footnote and reference without a source to read. It's been known to exist, but left living as an abstraction at best. That said, this will not be a typical episode because we have a responsibility on our hands, not just to bring you the story, but to make this case known. We want to do more than help it be remembered, but also remind those folks that are out there thinking that the truth is out there, that it's already been found. With all that said, I can't express the excitement I feel in what we're about to deliver. Not because it's the most wild or the most hilarious or the most contested UFO case, but because it's the closest thing to undeniable we've ever come across. In my opinion, this case is the new gold standard in UFO history. I know I'm building it up a lot. Please go look at the report if you're questioning this. Now, as I said a moment ago, this will not be a typical episode, not because we couldn't try to make it one, but because no one would know what the fuck we're making jokes about. That's the reality of this, right?
Yeah.
Our typical sarcasm would run the risk of genuinely misinforming folks.
True.
While there are a lot of lines that we don't have a problem crossing, we actually do have a serious issue with miseducating folks. It's something we're just not cool with. So, enough buildup. I hope you're as excited as we are as we resurrect one of the most important, most obscure, and most legitimate UFO events ever recorded. It was April 3rd, 1975. Locals had reported electrical interference and globular lightning, which was caused by an intense thunderstorm that had passed through their communities in southeastern North Carolina near the South Carolina border. Quote, at 1:45, two Lumberton policemen, P.H. Atkinson and Neil McCormick, while patrolling in their car near North Carolina 211 and 301, observed an unfamiliar light hovering over the water tower behind Lumberton High School. Their first impression was that it was a helicopter. They started driving north towards Fayetteville in an attempt to get a closer look, but lost sight of the object. Simultaneously, Phil Stanton, Lumberton patrolman, was alone in his police car approximately 200 yards from the water tower. He, too, thought the object was a helicopter. Stanton reported, I saw it hovering directly over the tower. When I got closer, switched off my motor and got out of the car. That's when I saw it up close. It was triangular-shaped, with a row of lights down each side and one big spotlight on the front. I estimated the object to be about 200 feet off the ground because the water tower is nearly 200 feet high. The craft looked like it was just about the size of my patrol car. I saw a beam of light just directed straight down, and it lit up the lettering on the water tower. Then the spotlight went out, and the thing just took off at a terrific rate of speed, making no sound. It would later be noted by CUFOS investigators that the water tower was 162 feet high. Now, immediately after his encounter, Phil Stanton picked up the radio and called St. Paul's police station some 12 miles north of his location to let them know what he had just seen and that it was heading their way. It was shortly before 1:55 a.m. when, quote, Patrolman R.T. Tommy Haggins and civilian John Bud McPherson were in the St. Paul's police station when they heard Stanton's call that a UFO was seen heading north from Lumberton along Route 301. About 2 miles outside of town, they saw a blinding flash of light which lit up the woods like a giant flashbulb. McPherson said, when I first saw the object, it was coming up from behind some trees, which led me to believe it had been on the ground before that. I could see the outline of the trees silhouetted against the light. It rose slowly above the trees, Haggins added, started to move slowly, then suddenly accelerated, changed direction, and in 15 to 20 seconds, it had faded out and disappeared. The light had intensified real bright when it first started to accelerate. McPherson estimated the object to be about the size of a twin-engine Cessna, and he said that it made no sound. This is something that I'm just going to take a note here and say. This is a pattern. I don't just mean to plant it as a seed in your head, but as we dig through some more of these cases, I can't help but notice that the folks who are far away from the object think that it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And the folks that are right next to it think that it's small. All the folks that are right below it, right near it, or within 200 feet, which happens a lot, they all pretty much describe it as the same size. Where folks that are 500 feet-ish more away, which is like not even a huge separation in distance,
mm-hmm.
almost always are saying that it's big.
Weird. Yeah, the illusion of it, I guess. You know, like looking up when you're close to it, and maybe it's like really tall. And so when you're closer to it, you don't see the tallness as much. But if you're looking far away, you see the tallness of it, you know? But it's not long.
It could be. I almost get the feeling that, so there's that spotlight on it. It's incredibly bright. I feel like the disorientation that the massive light causes, or the brightness of the light.
Truth, yeah.
You know, like kind of contrasted against like a pitch black sky,
mm-hmm.
causes people to think that it's bigger than it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for the record here, too, I actually do want to make a note. In the report itself, what happens over and over and over again with these witness testimonies is there's drawings made by one of the witnesses. And when there's combined situations of multiple witnesses from different angles all seeing a similar craft, right, or reporting the craft, in the report itself, you see where these other witnesses from the situation all signed off on the drawing saying that's what we saw.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one section where there's 8 or 9 cops that are all signing off, like swearing on it, saying like that's what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the shit that gets built up with this. So
it's a lot. Yeah, that's crazy.
And with that, almost picture a fat boomerang, almost like, so it's not a perfect triangle piece. It still has the kind of that cutout in the back of it, right? You would assume the point would be the front, right?
Yeah.
But it almost has like a little cutout.
Yeah.
That's the craft that's pretty much being described over and over again. Most of the time with the drawings, you'll come to realize that it was the angle at which the person saw it which affected how they ended up drawing it. Some folks saw it completely flat from the side. Other folks, it goes right over top of their head, and that affects kind of what they end up drawing.
Yeah.
But still, at the same time, you have folks that are in the surrounding, you know, the immediate surrounding area, all agreeing this is what we saw.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again throughout this case.
Yeah.
Within 20 minutes of the craft sighting by Haggins and McPherson in St. Paul's, a dispatcher named Ron Thompson had already issued a notification over the radio to all Hook County law enforcement that it was headed in their direction. Quote, a few minutes later, at about 2:15, Deputy George S. McGuire in Hook County reported that he was in pursuit of a V-shaped object which he last saw heading northeast towards Sampson County, end quote. Now, this moment actually marks the first of what will become many police chases of the object. It is low enough to the ground and visible enough that they're not chasing Venus. No, they're not chasing a sandhill crane.
Yes.
They are on a highway.
Yeah.
The object is either directly over them or it's running parallel to the highway. They were looking at the object flying,
mm-hmm.
and they're just hitting the gas on their cruisers.
Yeah.
At 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock, over and over and over again. They are seeing a physical object in the sky and pursuing it. Well, just 5 minutes later, quote, at 2:20, Officer Jim Driver of the Roseboro Sampson County Police Department, alone in his patrol car, noticed a series of lights in the air, hovering over some pecan trees. After watching it hover for about a minute, assuming it to be a helicopter, he noticed a big light in the front of the object as it silently remained over the trees. I got out of the car at that point and could not hear any sound coming from the object. When I tried to radio to headquarters, my car radio became all scrambled, so I had to use my walkie-talkie instead. The light on the object swung around and lit up the pecan trees, which were about 200 feet away, Driver said, and he had a side view of the object and guessed it to be somewhat longer than an automobile. He estimated its altitude to be approximately 200 feet. Some low scudding clouds remained after the storm, and the object was well beneath the clouds. The bright light on it became much more intense, Drever said, and then the craft took off at a very high rate of speed to the southeast. End quote. In total, Drever had been within 200 feet of the craft for roughly 2 minutes before it took off. During that time, he noted the object to be well below the clouds and experienced inconsistent electronical interference. Like, all hallmarks here.
Yeah. All the normal earmarks of a UFO encounter.
Yeah.
Seeing it. It reminds me of Tilton, just going over top of the trees.
Yeah, the same thought going through this. I was like, when was Tilton? I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, at 2:35 a.m., quote, 15 minutes later, a seemingly identical object was reported by James Buchanan, a member of the Roseboro Rescue Squad. He observed it as it lit up the pecan trees. When he got back into his car to use the radio, he took his eyes off the object. When he looked back out, it had completely vanished. End quote. It would have been around this time, within an hour of the initial sightings at 1:45 a.m., that Lumberton police were reaching out to the Center for UFO Studies to inform them of the UFO being witnessed around the area. So, in only 55 minutes, there has been witnesses across three counties, including six officers from four different police departments, two of which had close encounters lasting up to a couple minutes, and there's already been at least one high-speed chase.
That's crazy.
It's only been 55 minutes.
Damn, longer than I've had five stars in Grand Theft Auto.
You know how many relationships I would still have if things lasted longer than that? Anyways. Well, on top of that, there was also two citizen reports, making it now a total of eight witnesses, all of which are essentially explaining seeing the same thing to some extent, either the same type and size of craft or the intense light of the craft that it's emitting, right? Like, they're all, if you're just hearing this over the radio, very easy to assume they're talking about the same thing, right? But there's something else to keep an eye on here, the predictability of the craft's direction. Almost every time someone clocks the direction it's heading and calls it in, people in that area then see it as it's arriving. Well, it's now 3:30 a.m., an hour after the last sighting, and the Lumberton PD had just placed a call to CUFOS, the Center for UFO Studies, which was founded and ran by none other than Dr. J. Allen Hynek, but more on that later. Quote, an unidentified officer in the Baldwin County town of Elizabethtown reported, quote, an object, end quote, near Highway 701, heading southwest towards Clarkton and Baldenboro. He gave chase, but lost the UFO in the cloud cover. Meanwhile, dispatcher Thompson had notified the Columbus County Sheriff's Department and the police departments in Fairmont and Dillon counties, South Carolina, as well as the South Carolina Highway Patrol, that the object might be headed their way. 6:55, 5 minutes before official sunrise, an unidentified lighted object was reported by Columbus County Sheriff's deputies. End quote.
Hey.
So this now brings our total up to over 10 witnesses, eight of which are officers, and we've had two high-speed chases.
Damn.
Just in the first night. And the last one, it just says deputies. Like, we don't know how many. Right.
Yeah, this has turned into the craziest version of Cops right now.
Yeah, right? And I'm not going to keep doing the tally at the end of every damn quote or anything like that. I'm just trying to show you, like, just within a few hours, how shit starts to tally up.
Yeah, yeah.
At a certain point, you can't keep tally of how much crap goes on here in a moment.
Yeah. It's like, hey, I'm over here. Hey, I'm over here. Hey, I'm over here. And it's like, hey, there's this coming over to you. Hey, yeah, we see it. You know, it's like just back and forth. Hey, do you see it? Yeah, I see it.
It's like literally what's going to happen over 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much more to that. But just goddamn, when do you get shit like this?
All it's missing is, I always wanted to see a UFO.
Oh, it ain't missing that now.
Oh, well, it's coming.
This case has everything.
Mm-hmm.
I swear to God, this case has almost everything we've covered on our show. All the UFO episodes, besides, you know, like creepy little gremlins that are coming in different sizes, they're stuck in Mojave Valley, or, you know, like Betty Andreessen's like meat that she was cooking for him. Besides those two things, pretty much every other UFO case.
It is it.
This has elements of it. Well, skipping ahead now, we arrive back in Lumberton, where between 10:03 and 10:08 p.m., the Robeson County Sheriff's Department started receiving reports from multiple other police departments regarding a UFO flying along and near various highways. So now we're just at the point of multiple police departments.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, with Rolland deputies specifically reporting a V-shaped craft and officers from the Red Springs Police Department giving the craft's location and route. It's coming off the angle of like, well, we're over here and we're at this intersection and we're going north on blah, 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 blah. It's heading this way. It just keeps adding up.
Yeah.
Right?
The cops are just passing it off as they're driving down the highway. It's like, oh, going into your district. You follow it now.
Dude, like, you're joking, but like, that's almost literally what happens.
Yeah, that's truth. Yeah.
so that start of that spiel was 10:03 to 10:08 p.m.
5 minutes.
Right. Those few minutes, right? Which, like, if any case legitimizes all the shit that we've given ufologists for, like, obsessing over the exact second and minute, like, this case, I was actually like, ooh, I need to eat crow on that one. Well, at 10:15, the phone began ringing and it wouldn't stop for the next 15 minutes as one state highway patrolman and six more Robeson County Sheriff's deputies would be calling in to report their sightings. In less than a half an hour, at least 9 to 10 officers have seen the object.
Damn.
At 11:45 p.m., quote, Scotland County deputies to the west of Robeson County reported that they were in pursuit of a V-shaped craft on Highway 71, headed toward Robeson County and Red Spring. Rolland police officer James Lewis reported without detail an unidentified object north of Rolland over Highway 301, headed northwest. End quote. 10 minutes later, at 11:55, St. Paul's deputies reported witnessing the craft flying at over 100 miles an hour. All the while, between the high-speed pursuits, I think what are we up to? We're like four now?
Yeah, this should be our fourth one, yes, because the other last one was three.
Four that are directly stated in the report. There was also all those calls that came in of cops seeing it and reporting its look at, they might have been, like, it's just,
they could have chased it. Yeah, they're just like, get it. Yep.
Yeah. So they had witnessed it going over 100 miles per hour. All the while, between high-speed pursuits and visual confirmation by police, calls were coming in from locals across Cumberland and Sampson counties. Now, I know most everyone isn't going to be familiar with the roads and regions of this area, but I included them because I think we can all relate. Now, here's the thing. If this was happening in your neck of the woods, right, you'd probably be able to visualize the direction and distance fairly well. You'd know that if it was flying along a highway that you drive every single day, then the craft is either going to or coming from a nearby town or city,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, Joey, if I was just like, hey, I just saw a UFO. It's heading down Patton Avenue towards West Asheville. Somebody from outside of town would be like, what the fuck do those distances mean? You would know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep.
You'd be able to head straight over to that spot, right? That's what's going on in all of this. So the names, the highways, the routes, they're going to start to sound a little bit familiar. There's an overall point to including this minutia in the story, right? And that's what's going on between all the references and unfamiliar locations, even without looking at a map. All the names of these highways, towns, and counties add up to proving a physical object is present. Because what we'll soon find is that time and again, locals who see the craft from just a few hundred feet away are then notifying others in real time as they watch it leave their location with a clear intent in its direction.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes north to south, other times east to west, but regardless, when the witness notifies people in the next area over, sure enough, another person, or more often, multiple people, soon become witnesses themselves. And then their calls start giving a heads up to the next group, and so on as this hopscotch of close encounters continues. Now, as for the calls themselves, having them logged down to the minute, it gives legitimacy to the sightings, because when the locations and calls are put on a timeline, it becomes clear that folks aren't just saying they saw the craft all over the place and everywhere. What it actually does is it shows that it's not UFO mania or a bunch of overexcited locals. No, the reports are leaving a clear trail, showing a path like footsteps across a map.
Yeah.
that's what happens with this case when everything is so perfectly down to the minute and all of this was getting logged, is that there were clear directions and there were confirmations along those routes.
Yeah.
Right? If this was everybody, you know, just at home listening to the scanners, or, I saw something too, and oh, I saw something and I did this, or cops trying to fuck around, the issue would become, how did it get from over here to over here? How did it, you know, like, no. When all things are said and done, there's a clear path between each of these instances.
Yeah. Did you draw it out on a map, the path?
In the report, there was a printed map of the area. And what I'm assuming he used was like colored pencil, because that's probably all he had in the field, you know?
Yeah.
But he did try to color code it and draw pencils, but like everything's so goddamn clustered. Like I was going to do it digitally.
It drew a penis, didn't it?
It drew a penis. No.
Yeah, they didn't want it. But, they didn't want to do it. They're just like, he's drawing it in the halfway and he gets there and he's like, nope, we'll stop.
Well, I was, while I was obsessing over, like, how do I break this down? How do I present this to folks? I was going to put it into an interactive map. But then I realized I only had, like, a few days to, like, a week to actually, like, write this out. And, like, the map wasn't actually helping because there's just so much going on that I'm like.
Yeah, it's just, like, clusterfuck of, like, all these different sightings. And it's like,
It is. Furthermore, even when multiple people are calling at the same time, the directions they are giving about where they're seeing it, west of them, south of them, a quarter of a mile away, etc., are more often than not lining up with the locations where people are actively having close encounters. I can't stress this enough. So, like, the first case is actually perfect to kind of show what happens over and over again. There's two cops. They're driving down the road. They're like, what the fuck's that light? I think it's a helicopter. We're just going to start driving towards it. At the same time, there's a dude that's pretty much directly underneath it, and he's just like, what the fuck am I looking at? So those two reports end up actually cooperating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it ends up validating that person's close encounter, where the first two cops had no clue that there was another cop sitting directly underneath it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that just keeps happening over and over and over and over again. Sometimes, like, double, triple, quadruple witnesses that are all pinpointing the same location.
Mm-hmm.
Again, on the back of clear paths and trails that are being outlined here.
Yeah, yeah.
When do you get this in a UFO case?
Not much. Usually it's just one person sees it, or two people in the same spot see it, or, you know, driving along the road, they just see it and they're just like, oh, cool. And nobody else calls it in.
Yeah.
It's like, this one's like, you got all the angles covered of, like, looking up at one, looking at to the side of one. You got people on the other side, people saying, look over there. That's going to come and that's coming to you. And they're like, now I see it. It's coming. And they're like waving at them.
And then they explain the same goddamn thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Consistency. Consistency, which is not a big thing in a lot of reports.
And we're still on the first night.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to drive that home. Well, to add even more credibility, the majority of these reports are coming in from officers in different law enforcement departments spread out all across the southeastern region of North Carolina. In fact, citizen witnesses are barely referenced in this report, not because they didn't happen, but because there were so many police calls. And almost all of these calls were recorded in official police logs with the reporting officer's name attached to their statement. So basically, from there, UFO investigators were able to easily and quickly find almost every officer and interview them, making citizen sightings just, honestly, just bonus snacks between a larger trail of breadcrumbs left by so many officers whose encounters were logged, recorded down to the minute, and soon after, personally interviewed by professional UFO investigators who were on the ground and could dig into their statements. They could actually be like, "What? Where were you parked?
Yeah.
Where were you looking? You said it was by this sign. How many feet away were you?" They were able to hit that shit immediately.
Yeah.
It wasn't a, well, so-and-so's grandma's cousin. Well, now you're going to spend 15 months looking for them. The memory fades. The
20 years. Yeah.
This was like, no, it's Officer Johnson. We're going to go over here. He's with this police department. These are his shifts.
At the moment.
Yeah. So I say this because if you couldn't tell by what we've been saying right now, so many documented reference points with such little need for speculation to connect the dots is so rare in UFO cases.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have this down to the minute without trying.
Yep.
That is insane.
Yeah, it's a lot. And you know when the citizens were calling in and they're like, hello, this is 911. It's like,
I just saw a UFO over there, and it's something to do it. And it's just like, we know. Shut up. Hand click.
Did you?
He's like, next one. 911. I just saw a UFO over there. Oh, we know.
Are you a cop?
No.
Click.
You basically just predicted the next quote. Now, damn it, Joey. You're good. Well, that whole tangent aside, it was now Friday morning at 1 a.m., a little over an hour after an officer north of Rollin reported the UFO heading northwest. It was then that an unknown citizen, quote, called the Robeson County Sheriff's Department to report a large white light heading towards North Carolina 710 north of Rollin. God damn it, Joey. It's literally the next. Well, 10 minutes later, and 75 miles to the northeast, in Sampson County, Officer John Hayes of Newton Grove Police Department had been alerted by the Sampson County Sheriff's Department that numerous phone calls from citizens, as well as deputy reports, indicated that a UFO was headed in his direction. Hayes was on patrol off US 13 near Rural Paved Road 1703. He stopped his car and turned off the lights and engine. An object passed directly overhead. The ceiling was unlimited and the visibility was 7 miles. There was no cloud cover, basically, is what they're saying.
Yeah, pretty much.
I got outside the car then and estimated the object to be 300 to 400 feet high. The only sound I was able to hear was a very slight humming noise. I noticed a grayish-blue glow around the outer edges of the thing, and also noted that the craft was moving extremely slow, much too slow for any conventional aircraft. In the 2 minutes he was able to observe the object, Officer Hayes could clearly make out a V-shaped structure, a series of lights underneath each side, and a large spotlight on the front. Hayes also stated that the object made a flat, as opposed to banked, turn. End quote. Now, Hayes is kind of one of the first folks who really acknowledges that they're hearing any sort of noise with this craft.
Yeah, a low hum.
Yeah, and like when you look at the summary, because the report, a few pages in, it has a summary, there's a total of 22 accounts of some sort of noise, some sort of humming noise that goes with the craft. And that's a large number, but I feel like looking over the finer details, there's other parts of people's witness statements that just kind of get summarized as like a humming noise, but they're not an actual humming noise. Well, actually, in the next witness statement, you'll kind of get an idea of what I mean. Anyways, it does leave the question, at least in my mind, maybe the craft is making a tone other witnesses aren't able to hear. So like classic example would be for a brief period of time, they tried to release those speakers, which specifically were just targeted at folks that were under the age of 17, 16 years old that were able to hear certain frequencies and noises.
Yeah, I remember this.
Then very quickly, all those teenagers were like, bro, I can totally have a ringtone in class that the teacher can't hear. And so then it became a ringtone on people's phones.
Smart, yeah.
But the point is that depending on how old you are and, you know, how much damage has happened to your hearing, there's entire frequencies that are very audible, you know, at certain points in your life that eventually you can't hear. So it did kind of make me think of that. I was like, is the craft emitting a sound that, you know, this person, because we don't have his age, he can hear, but these other folks can't?
Yeah.
Makes sense. If it's machinery, machinery makes specific sounds. Another one is he just hearing it because it was literally directly above him? Like, is this a sound that is going straight down on the ground? Or maybe there's a sound coming from somewhere around him, but he's so focused on it that he doesn't realize that he's associating an atmospheric sound that's around him with the craft. I mean, that would be a very strong impression of a memory, and there's only one thing you're looking at in that moment, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
He stopped in a rural road, too, which is, like, notoriously quiet.
That's a good point.
And he turned off his car, shut off his lights, so there's no, like, electronic noise around at this moment. And he's in a clear night, so it doesn't seem like there's... I mean, if he's on a rural road, there's probably trees around him, too. So anything that goes straight over him is going to funnel that sound down into the road.
That's a good point.
You know? And I would feel like he would hear it a little louder if it was right over top of
him. That's a damn good point, actually. Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
Most other the police officers are driving, you know. I feel like a lot of the police officers are driving right after them. So they're here in their freaking burning engine going over 100 trying to catch up. And probably a lot of the other people aren't as focused on this.
The officer who saw them or saw the craft above the pecan trees first, he said that there was no noise. But he was also 200 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
He even says like he had a side view of the object.
Yep.
Yeah. This dude parked the car, turned off the engine, turned off. I'm just like, are you like possessed by who the fuck does that? Who's like, UFO, you know what I should do? Be easy bait. Like, unless it's like a couple days before like tax day, I'm not doing that, bro.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, hit me up in April. But while he's one of the only people to report a sound, at least in this very specific way, Officer Hayes does become the first of many to report the craft's odd movements, more specifically saying it makes a flat instead of banked turn. This fucked with me because I'm like reading these, you know, case after case, and I'm picturing this shit, right? So here's what I'd like y'all to do. We're gonna go do a little exercise here. So picture an airplane making a sharp turn. When it does this, the whole craft has to tilt left to go left, and it has to tilt right to go right. That's a banked turn. But for this craft, imagine lying on your back and you're looking up through a glass table. I walk up, and just a few feet to your right side, I set down a triangle-shaped block with a flat bottom directly on top of the glass. You watch, tracking its straight path as I slowly push it forward until it's directly above your eyes. Then suddenly, I twist it to the left and start moving in a new direction. And this movement, this rotation, it's the way it's described, the way it maneuvers, it's almost like the craft turns left and right. It's turning faster than it's actually moving forward. They're basically saying that walking along at a casual pace on the ground, like you're below it, it's slow, but then it's like, shup, shup, shup.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is about that visual, but it's like, it's so fucking unsettling to me that it's just, it's like it's walking or pivoting on ground above us.
Yeah.
Anywho, about 20 minutes after Officer Hayes' close encounter, quote, at 1:30, policeman Ernest Hagen and two passengers were on a rural road north of St. Paul's when they spotted a flying V-shaped object. Hagen stopped and got out of the car. The outstanding features were a large white spotlight in the front and rows of red and green lights along the edges. The altitude was estimated to be 200 feet, the distance to the object to be 500 feet. It appeared somewhat bigger than the car and was moving not less than 50 miles an hour. It was coming directly towards me when suddenly it turned sharply. It didn't bank. It started heading towards Fayetteville. I started to chase it in the patrol car. I got up to 70 miles an hour until I was right beside it. And then it started to pick up speed. I got up to 100 miles per hour, and then it just left real fast. I viewed the object for about 8 minutes, and I never heard it make a sound except when it turned and made a shh type of noise. 7 minutes after Hagen and his two passengers lost contact with the craft, quote, Robeson County Special Deputy William Halstead was driving south along Route 301 at 1:45 with three other lawmen when a report came over the radio from the Roland Police Department of a UFO heading north near Route 301. A few seconds later, I saw it myself, Halstead said. I stopped the car, got out, and looked through binoculars at it for about 30 seconds. It seemed to have a V-shaped body that I could make out because a large bright light on the front of it illuminated the perimeter of the object. It was between 200 and 300 feet in altitude, and it remained stationary for about 15 seconds before moving off rapidly without making any sound. Halstead described the object as big as an average car. The three other men in the car were unimpressed by the object, according to Halstead. End quote. I do like to picture, the only time that comes up in any of this, I do like the picture, like the three unimpressed men in the car is like three men in black that like Halstead had picked up hitchhiking.
Yeah, they're just like looking around. I don't think that's very impressive.
Halstead gets back in the car all stoked while two of them in their back like fighting over a cheap pen in the back seat, you know, and like the third is just like, yeah, I've seen bigger.
You know, I've seen bigger. He's like, you've seen what? Nothing.
What?
Nothing.
Where did you get this lipstick?
It's crazy to think about, too, that, like, they talk about how, in a lot of ways, like, it's a triangle, and they say it's able to be seen by the, like, the spotlight it kind of has and the lights. And, I mean, to be fair, like, maybe they can't see all of it, too, because, like, the light that's bouncing off of it doesn't always show everything that's in it, especially could be darkness, because they talked about that in the other UFO experiences, that maybe they couldn't see it. And them saying that it's the size of the car is, like, sometimes wildly different from some people that are like, hey, it's the size of a car, but this is what you're talking about earlier. And then some people being like, it's the size of, like, a football field, you know, like,
yeah,
as a triangle, you know. And it's just, like, just the, I guess, the way that they're looking at it changes their perspective on how big they think, which is normal, you know, when you're looking at stuff.
Yeah, no, it's 100%, like, normal to have, like, the differences in, like, sizes and things like that. And, like, so far, pretty much the only person that said it was bigger than, like, around the size of a car was the person who said it was the size of a twin-engine Cessna.
Yeah.
Which they do make a note in the report of being like, that's between 65 to 85 feet or something like that.
Yeah.
But they're also watching it from the distance, rise up out of trees, and it's at a hard angle in front of them. You know, it's flat in front of them, like, rising up.
Yeah.
And, again, you have to make the assumption it's the same object. That's totally fair.
Uh-huh.
But I will say almost everything else lines up. So, like, I'm assuming it's the same object.
Yeah. When you talk about a triangle, like, because I just want to clear this up, too, because something, like, I was just picturing.
Well, it's, like, V-shaped.
Yeah, like a V-shaped object. Do you mean it looks more like a pyramid flying?
No.
Or does it more look like a B-3 bomber? Just, like, looks like a big V in the front.
This is good that you're bringing this up, because I've read this so much, I know what's being said, you know?
I want to make clear for me and everybody else that's listening, too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I guess the letter A without the little middle connecting line. I think that would be a good description for it, with the top of the letter A being where a large spotlight exists, and the outer edges of the letter A being, you know, track lighting, almost.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
We're there.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, regardless of the three people that I'm assuming were the men in black, the three killjoys in black, Reverend Evander Parnell, who, after hearing all the UFO buzz bounce back and forth over the police radio all night, had already made the drive from his home in Lumberton to a spot nearby where all the sightings were happening, like, kind of out on the edge of town. I think it was like 8 miles outside of town in the countryside, where he waited to see he could see a UFO for himself. I mean, it used to be a common hobby that folks would listen to police scanners, you know, especially like older folks would listen to police scanners. There'd be some crazy shit going on. You go spectate.
Yeah.
It's what we had to do before Twitter, you know? So,
that,
like,
was Twitter for Facebook, for MySpace. Yep.
Yeah.
They were just like, what's on the scanner?
Yeah. And the good reverend, he was hearing all this crap going on, and he realized, he's like, actually, I know a little spot just outside of town. I ain't got nothing else to do. I might as well go out there and see what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So he drove out there.
Yep.
Homie was waiting for about 90 minutes. And then, quote, I saw a brightly lit object rise up from behind the trees, making no noise. It rose about 300 feet and headed east real fast. That was at 1:45 a.m. That was the same time as Halstead's sighting. It was in the exact same direction. Like, in the notes in the report, there's, like, arrows about north, west, blah, 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 this and that, and, like, all the locations and shit. The reverend later corroborated some shit that this officer had said, but he corroborated it from an abstract distance away, but the general direction.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, right after those sightings, quote, an object matching this description was seen in Rolland, 15 miles south of Halstead's position, a minute and a half after his sighting. So we're talking about this motherfucker going slow as fuck, and then it picks up speed, like,
yeah,
directly over to a spot.
Yeah, like a slingshot.
Yeah, but it's still going in clear, you know, straight paths, where it's like, well, then it shot off, you know, north really fast, and then shit pops off in the north.
Yeah.
The timing, behavior, description, and directions all adds up down to the minute, corroborate the encounter reported by Deputy William Halstead and the three other officers who were riding with him.
Uh-huh.
Now, technically, the next sighting of the night was had by a man named Mr. James Ed Floyd. I say technically because this won't be the last we hear from Mr. Floyd. In fact, unlike every other witness who only reported seeing the UFO once, Mr. Floyd reports having four sightings.
Yeah.
Unique sightings. But those will be in episode two, when we cover how his experience takes a bit of a, let's just say, a leap compared to what almost 100 other people would eventually report over this 6-day-long flap. Anywho, Mr. Floyd was a security guard who worked the graveyard shift at a place called Almack Knitting Mill, which, while closed now due to unrelated events, used to be one of the biggest suppliers of high-end textiles and knitted fabrics. I looked it up. There was a bunch of, like, posters from, like, the 60s and 70s of, like, all these, like, fashionistas and stuff like that. And, like, it used to be, like, a big deal for, like, high-end clothing. Like, this was the source for it, right?
Wow.
Because I was also like, why the hell is there a security guard for a knitting mill? What the hell is going on in this knitting mill?
Hey, that stuff, all that, the knitting supplies, the, like, the fabric, expensive. So he needed to guard that with his life.
If you're buying at retail, if you go to literally any Goodwill in the country, you can find all the supplies you need for like a dollar.
They didn't have Goodwill at this time.
That's true.
Just 3 miles outside of Lumberton to the south, Almack Knitting Mill would have been a front row seat to watch the craft as it made its routes around the region. Mr. Floyd's 11:30 at night to 8:30 in the morning shift would mean he was up and alert during prime hours of UFO activity. Like, he kind of basically had a front row seat to all of this. It would have been the perfect spot.
And he's not doing anything.
Yeah. Like, he has to just sit there all night, you know, guarding knitting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this leads us to Mr. Floyd's first sighting sometime between 2 and 3 a.m. Quote, on Friday, it came right up to the southwest corner of the building and just stopped. And I noticed it was making no sound. Then it started moving up over the building. I've never seen anything that can move like that thing did. An airplane can't come up there and do that, or a helicopter either, without me hearing it. Mr. Floyd said he was only 200 feet from the object. He said that the Almack Knitting Mill has a highly sensitive microphone system surrounding the building as a theft preventative measure. If anybody's trying to break in around and back where I can't see them, the mics can pick up the noises and I can hear it in the shed where I sit. Now, that flying thing was just a few feet away from the building and it was making no sound. It went beyond the rear of the building and hovered over a canal out there, then sped off westerly. End quote. While that doesn't sound far-fetched, given all the other reports that have been happening, just put a star next to his name for later. Just heads up that Mr. Floyd, he's special.
He is. It seems like it.
He's an interesting guy.
He's a security guard, guarding all those fabrics. The UFO probably just wanted some fabrics. It was like, we'll do some knitting tomorrow.
Yeah, let me see your finest textiles. Hasn't that always inspired trade? Foreign fabrics and textiles?
Actually, yeah. Yep, spices and fabrics.
That's why we can never let the aliens have our sweet baby rays.
Nope.
Anyways, after a long night of sightings, high-speed chases, and close encounters, which started at 10 p.m. on Thursday and continued into Friday morning, going nonstop for almost 5 hours, things finally settled back to some semblance of normal in Lumberton by early morning. It would have also been around this time that J. Allen Hynek, the father of modern ufology, was telling one of his researchers at Kufos to get his bags packed and head over to Lumberton, North Carolina to interview witnesses about the sightings they received a call about the other night. Founded in 1973 by Hynek, Kufos was the result of his 22 years spent dispelling UFOs for the government, from Project Sign in 1947 all the way up to Project Blue Book and its closure in 1969. By the end of it all, he'd finally come to the conclusion that maybe not everything was a sandhill crane, temperature inversion, or swamp gas. He'd seen and investigated enough to believe the UFO phenomenon, while rare, was real. With a lifelong career in science and 2 decades of leading government research in UFOs under his belt, Hynek had established the Center for UFO Studies as an organization for serious investigation conducted by professional researchers. Which is why, when Lee Spiegel, who he'd just told to fly to Lumberton, jokingly responded, "Oh boy, I finally get to see a UFO," Hynek didn't get it. and Lee used to quote this. Lee had just passed away about 4 or 5 months ago at the time of this recording. And I listened to a bunch of little things where, you know, he'd casually bring up Lumberton and he would talk about this moment. He's like, he tried to make that joke about, like, "Oh boy, I finally get to see a UFO." And just Hynek was just like, "What?" It is rarely, if ever, the case that when researching a UFO event, the investigator gets to come into contact or witness a UFO themselves. I mean, your job is to go to Lumberton, North Carolina, and interview witnesses from the sightings that took place on Thursday, April 3rd, then collect any related data you can in order to help support a more thorough investigation into the events. After that, Hynek still did not realize Lee was kidding and proceeded to say, "If that is disappointing, or if you would like, I can ask another investigator to go instead."
That's just jaw being jaw right there.
Well, at that point, Lee backed down from his lighthearted joke, got serious, and agreed to fly straight to Lumberton that evening.
Yep.
And that's something that Lee, up until his passing, would often quote about Lumberton, right? Again, this is something where there's been references to it. People know that it exists, but no one can find the goddamn report itself.
Yeah. It just got misplaced. Boop.
More or less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But Hynek, just like always the serious one, is just like, "Wait, are you going under the assumption you'll see UFOs? No, 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 no. See, you're a priority as an investor." And he's like, "Oh my God, I'm just kidding. Oh my God." He's like, "Well, if you don't want to go." And he's like, "No, I want to go."
It's like, "Hynek, come on, take a joke." He's like, "What's a joke?"
But that wasn't formatted in the traditional format of a 2-3 joking style, which is common within the English language. Now, you see, yeah, the point of this conversation, you're just like, "Oh my God, Hynek, shut up."
The guy's at least just like, "Send me a PDF. It's fine. I'll go. I gotcha. Send me a PDF."
That is Hynek before he believed in UFOs as potentially not from Earth, you know. Definitely the person you'd want to hire if you were the government to just joy kill everybody's experience. You know, just like coming in with an unrelenting passion for not being passionate and making everything rational, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just like, "Well, that clearly that was a crane. Oh, that was seagulls. I don't know what you're talking about, Lubbock."
Well, and I want to say, if you guys have not seen Project Blue Book, there actually is a TV show called Project Blue Book.
Uh-huh.
It's really good.
Loved
the guy who plays Littlefinger from Game of Thrones was in it, was J. Allen Hynek. And I feel like he seems like the perfect guy to play him, too. Yeah. It's pretty good.
But by that point in the day, another event would have happened, too. This one in Lumberton, more specifically 100 miles east of Lumberton in Jacksonville, North Carolina. And while it's eventually understood to be the only daytime sighting of the Triangle craft during the flap, it is not the only daytime phenomenon that witnesses see take place. Quote, "Mrs. Ann S. had just opened the drapes in her suburban home and was watching seagulls in flight. Suddenly, a V-shaped craft flying almost in line with the gulls caught her attention. The craft was bright, non-reflective white with no visible seams or ports. It was heading into the wind at an estimated speed of 80 to 100 miles per hour. She first sighted the craft flying from east to west. It then changed to a northwest heading, flew horizontally toward the cloud, then flew straight up, disappearing into the cloud as the cloud passed over it. The craft seemed to slip from one altitude to another. There was a slight hesitation, but not a full stop, as it changed flight path from horizontal to vertical. As it flew up into the clouds, its speed increased to approximately 200 miles an hour. Its altitude, while in horizontal flight, was estimated at 1,500 feet. The horizontal distance could have been as much as 1/4 mile when first seen, but the object was almost directly overhead when it entered the cloud. Mrs. S. is very familiar with all kinds of aircraft and felt that any conventional aircraft would have been audible from inside the house under these circumstances. She estimated that the object had a 60-foot wingspan. It subtended an angle equal to about her thumbnail at arm's length. Now, there's a bunch of nerd math that goes into this below that I'm not going to fully read through, but researcher goes on to make a note here. "This is the only daytime report of a V-shaped object, and when taken in context with the other UFO descriptions in this locale on this date, it becomes significant as an added piece of corroborative evidence, especially since Mrs. S. had not heard of the other sightings before her observation."
Huh.
After the noon sighting by Mrs. S., the rest of the daylight hours would remain quiet and uneventful. A calm that would only last until 26 miles east of Lumberton in Baldwin County at 8:45 p.m. Quote, "Police Chief Gary Moore of the White Lake Police Department was on routine patrol around the lake near North Carolina 53. As I was driving along, I noticed a bright light in the air in front of me. The light kept getting brighter and appeared to be coming right down on top of me, like it was going to hit the car, and that's when I pulled over. It came to within 200 feet of me, and I got out of the car and looked up at the thing. The light from it was so bright I had to look away. I reached back into the car for an airplane landing light that I carry with me and shined it up at the object. I blinked the light at it, and the spotlight on the front of the object blinked back.
Hmm.
I could see it was V-shaped, had lights all the way around it, and this one big light that looked to me about double the size of a car steering wheel. This light was shining down to the ground like a beam, and it lit up the area of at least 500 feet in diameter on the road. It had now been hovering in the air for about 5 minutes. It was no jet. A jet can't park in the air like this thing did. It then started to move westerly towards Lumberton, and I followed it for about 2 miles. I got up to 85, 90 miles per hour, and then it just left real fast, about 200 miles per hour, I figured. And it never made a bit of sound the whole time I observed it. End quote. Now, keep in mind, as we kind of hinted at earlier, this is only 1 year after the recordings we heard from the Tilton, New Hampshire Police Department, their whole encounter with the UFO way back on episode 75, the one where Marky was enthusiastically making first contact with the aliens and teaching them Morse code. Now you.
Yep.
Now me. Now you. Now me.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
This is only a year later.
Yeah.
It's also on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. But this isn't unprecedented for the time period and for the stuff. And yeah. Honestly, like, I was thinking about this today, like, as I was kind of going through and editing the script, like, looking back now, I don't remember the police in that tape ever fully describing the craft.
No, I don't. I feel like they only described the lights. They only described it as, like, a white, bright orb light. And they never described it as, like, triangle. No, I don't think, because I was thinking on that, too, and I was like, I think that they described it, the light, more than anything, as it was being like a giant orb more than like a craft.
Yeah, right? Like, I don't know. I remember them talking about, like, the colors and stuff, like seeing different colors and things.
Yep.
Because there's the whole interview with the police chief at the police station and, like, the sketches and stuff. And it's like, well, the R means red and blah, blah, blah means blue and stuff. They don't actually say, like, what the size of it is or, like, what it's shaped like. They're just communicating with a light that's like hovering near them.
Yeah, it did similar things too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it just like hovered above trees. It went above like little shops and stuff like that, and it raced them down the road as well too, which was kind of weird. And like then it also, now we're getting that it blinks the light with people.
Yeah, well, about 20 minutes later and 40 miles away from where Moore had just had his encounter, Officer Ron Thompson, who I think is the same person as earlier, the dispatcher who, like, notified an area. Well, he was off duty at the time.
Uh-huh.
And even so, he was put on alert due to new UFO reports starting to come in. So it kind of sucks. He was off work, but they were just basically like, hey, do you mind just hopping in your cruiser and just, like, driving around? Because we're starting to get a bunch of these reports in. So technically wasn't on, but he technically had to be there.
Yeah.
Quote, at 9:05, he was headed west to County Road number 1131, 5 miles northwest of Rolland, when he spotted a bright white light moving eastward at low altitude. He immediately gave pursuit and overtook it on Highway 501. The craft was hovering silently above and beside the open roadway approximately 100 yards away from me, Thompson said. I stepped outside my vehicle and with my right arm reached back in and switched my headlights on and off twice. And sure enough, the front spotlight on the craft flashed twice exactly. I could make out two spotlights on it, one on the front and one on the back. At no time did I see a V-shape, only lights. The thing then proceeded to move in a southwest direction, so I turned the car around to give pursuit again. I soon lost sight of the craft as it disappeared behind trees. As I was able to get within 100 yards of the thing, there's no possibility, as far as I'm concerned, that it could have been any type of man-made conventional aircraft. I've never seen anything like it before. End quote.
Hmm.
And while all that was going on, something I can only call rare took place. During these sightings, while everything is starting to pick up for the second night in a row, Lee Spiegel, the young UFO researcher working for Kufos walked into the Robeson County Sheriff's Department. It was 9:15 p.m., less than 48 hours since all this kicked off.
Damn.
The switchboard was lighting up with calls from concerned citizens and police officers. Everybody was just flooding in with reports of UFOs. The flap was far from over. Only a few minutes would pass between when Ron Thompson gave up his chase and when Lee Spiegel and a reporter named Peter Daugherty from the National Star and the director of communications for the Robeson County Sheriff's Department, Jay Freeman, would be in a cruiser, lights on and siren wailing as they raced towards the location Ron Thompson had last seen the UFO. Before the night is up,
dang,
each of these men will have multiple close encounters and become believers. And that's where we'll pick back up next week with part two, the conclusion of the Lumberton Report.
Woo! I'd love to get on that chase with them. That's crazy. Lee hauled ass to get there, too, I bet. He was just like, I'm getting there. Jalen Hunks, no, I don't know if you should, he's like, no, get out of my way. I'm going.
The shit, bro, this is a 6-day long event. The next episode, like y'all, I really hope that y'all get the point of the breakdown with this first episode of like just how fucking frequent shit's going on and like how documented it is. I'm going to have the layout be slightly different in the next one, but I do want to, you know, follow the actual case itself very, very closely. All that said, like, I'm not going to go through 4 days of exactly, you know, minute by minute of what we did in this episode, but I hope you got the vibe of how well the document and this shit is. There's 4 more days of this.
Yep.
That was less than 48 hours from the start of all this shit.
Yeah, and so many sightings, so many reports.
And now there's a fucking UFO researcher there working with the police.
Yep.
There's a national reporter that's there documenting shit that's going on. This is insane.
Yep.
I don't know how else to explain it other than I'm just, every single page that I flipped through, I was just like, why isn't this the biggest UFO case we know about? Why is there other, what? Like everything's there from the communication with the craft to quite literally close encounters to the hovering to multiple sets of witnesses to rapid acceleration to the behaviors and the movement of the craft. Like,
yep.
It all adds up.
Yeah, it does.
Anyways, really hope that y'all love this episode. I hope that you're excited for part two. Again, the full report will be in the show notes. It does read really well. I will give the heads up that like the first 5 or 6 pages look like, oh my God, this is going to be intense. And then it actually kind of starts off as a narrative. Read it. Read ahead. Read into the case. Like, please, I ask, like, if you think that I'm overly excited about what we're delivering, just go skim through it. And I think you'll very quickly be like basically in the same boat I am, which is just like, holy fucking shit. How has this been hidden for so goddamn long?
Yeah.
All that said, y'all are the shit. We will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Halsted gets back in the car all stoked while two of them in their back like fighting over a cheap pen in the back seat, you know, and like the third is just like, yeah, I've seen bigger.
Bigger. He's like, you've seen what? Nothing.
What?
Nothing.
Where did you get this lipstick?
It's